You are now listening to the Uncheckable Health Podcast with Dr. Thomas Hemingway. All right. Holy smokes. It is not only March, but it is this weird thing called daylight saving time. That's right. Not daylight savings time, which many of us often misspeak and say that, including myself. Who knew? It's daylight saving time is happening this weekend, this Sunday morning, 2 a.m. So don't forget to spring those clocks forward 1 hour. You're going to sadly lose 1 hour of sleep, but we're going to get into that. We're going to get into what is the deal with this craziness called daylight saving time in this podcast and how it may or may not adversely affect your health and what you can do about it. So this is going to prep you, get you pumped, get you ready, teach you some life skills, some skills that will be powerful no matter what time of year it is, whether it be daylight saving time or standard time, whatever that is, or if you're in Arizona or Hawaii, nay, we don't do either. We just do Hawaiian standard time, regular time. We never switch the clocks. And those folks, maybe there are aloha cousins over there. They're Ohana, if you will. They've decided also to not regard that daylight saving time thing. And anyway, we'll get into that in this podcast. We'll get into the pros and cons. We'll get into what you can do to arm yourself with the tools, tips, tricks, and how you can prevent adverse health outcomes with this craziness that they call daylight saving time that's been around off and on for over 100 years. It's kind of a crazy history, and you just can't make this stuff up. It's, as they say, fact is stranger than fiction. But first of all, I just want to thank you for being here, being part of the show, for being part of this unshakable health journey. You guys are the reason I do this, why I get up each and every day pumped up, amped to share with you pearls, tips, tricks, tools that I am using myself to build unshakable health. And hopefully you've got my book by now. It's Preventable, 5 Powerful Practices to Avoid Disease and Build Unshakable Health by yours truly, Thomas Hemingway, MD, available right now on Amazon.com. And if you haven't got a copy, please grab one. It has the tools that will help you shape your life to live in that optimal health, to live and thrive, not just simply survive your life. It has those tools, tips, and tricks that will help you move the needle to get that energy that you've always wanted, to wake up feeling juiced, refreshed, energized, and ready to just tackle the day. So make sure you grab a copy. And if you already have a copy, those several thousand of you that already have my book, thank you for reading it. Thank you for sharing it. Make sure you grab a copy for your friends, families, relatives, anybody who you know who is human that wants to optimize their health. This book can also help them. And drop a review, please, 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 over there on Amazon and click on that 5-star and type me up a little something, because I'd love to know what you're learning, what you're loving, maybe what you learned for the first time, maybe something you were reminded of, because I love hearing from you. That is the reason. So drop a review on Amazon. Drop a review, please, over there on Apple Podcasts, or rate it wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, what have you, because it is there, the Unshakable Health Podcast, pretty much wherever podcasts are found. And I just love, love, love each and every one of you. And thank you for being a part of this, being a part of this journey, being part of this movement. We are, gosh, coming up on 4 years running. It's crazy. In fact, we actually, let me think about that. We did. We actually already completed 4 years of podcasting, and we're going strong. We are getting out to you almost each and every week and sharing with you the newest, latest research in health and wellness, science, the stuff that moves the needle, the stuff that matters, not just the garbage that is shared in all of those influencer realms, which is often epidemiology and not true science in the way that we'd love to see it, right? The randomized, peer-reviewed control trials that are the level one evidence. We'd love to see that. And you can't always find it. But if you do find the other epidemiological data, you have to know it's not conclusive. It pretty much just gives you a hypothesis. Maybe we'll get into that in this show. If not, we'll do another one. But I do explain it all in the book, Preventable. So make sure you grab that. Make sure you're following along on Instagram, Dr. Thomas Hemingway, Facebook, Thomas Hemingway MD. Wherever you can find me, Thomas Hemingway MD. I am loving sharing this stuff with you. It is what gets me excited in my 50th year of life, ready to live another 50, because you and I know I will be the first, and I'm sharing it out here so that all the world can remind me, I will be the first surfer to continue to surf to 100 years old. Never been done before. I'm going to do that as well with snowboarding. I'm still as active as ever. Some of you may have seen recent posts on Instagram where I am sharing these giant jumps that I'm hitting with my young teenage boys, and they are keeping it real, keeping me going, keeping me hitting all those same features, because I am thriving right now. I'm feeling as good as I did when I was 16. I'm energized, full of life, but it is not without these simple principles that I share in my book. So thank you for being a part of this journey. Thank you for being a part of the show. Make sure you share it out. Share out this podcast. Share out the book. Share out any place you can the things that I'm sharing over there on Instagram, Dr. Thomas Hemingway. You can find me on my website, thomashemingway.com. Just love each and every one of you. Thank you for doing that. It means the world to me. Reach out to me. You can even email me, alohasurfdoc@gmail.com. I just love hearing from you. So without further ado, we're going to get into this. What is the deal with daylight saving time? Is it adversely affecting your health? And what you can do about it? Let's get into it. The history of daylight savings time is something that most people don't know much about. They think it was to help the farmers. Well, actually, most farmers did not like the idea of the daylight savings time and did not support it back then, and don't really support it now to a large extent. Because think about it. For them, it totally messes with their workday. It makes them potentially work later into the day during the hours of sunlight, while the non-farmer gets to recreate or enjoy the time in the daylight after work to do fun stuff outdoors, whether it be hiking, biking, surfing, or whatever the case may be, right? So anyway, the history of daylight saving time, not daylight savings time, like many of us say, including myself, often misspeak and call it daylight savings time. Well, it's actually not that at all. It's called daylight saving time. And they called it that to kind of save the hours of the day, if you will, to be able to get more done. And this historically is often credited to, yes, the one and only Benjamin Franklin, although he was not really the first one to talk about it. And in fact, even the Romans way back when, they actually change the time, if you will, during the summer season to be able to benefit them and to have a longer day. They even adjusted their water clocks. And this was a little bit different than the classic daylight saving time that we're used to. But in any case, this whole idea concept has been around much, much, much longer than many of us think. Most of us think back to, you know, the adage that Benjamin Franklin used to always share with people, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise, which I don't disagree with. I actually think it's great to get up early. Better yet, to get up naturally with the sunrise, I think is outstanding. And when we do daylight saving time, it actually messes with that, because we often have to get up before the sunrise, at least for the first several weeks or even months, until things kind of shape up a bit with the days that are lengthening into the summer, etc. But in any case, Benjamin Franklin, way back when in the 1770s and 80s, was credited to having spent some time in Paris. He was an ambassador and got to observe a lot of the stuff that was going on. And he just felt like they stayed in bed too long. They didn't get up and take advantage of the daylight hours. And so he is often credited with proposing daylight saving time, though it wasn't actually him. Most people will actually look at an entomologist from New Zealand by the name of George Hudson, who first talked about it because he wanted to actually, he did shift work, kind of like I do oftentimes working in the hospital. He did shift work, but in a different way. He was studying insects, and he wanted to have more time to do that. He actually liked his work. He wanted to study later into the day, so he kind of proposed the first daylight saving time in 1895. He presented this paper to the Wellington Philosophical Society, and he wanted to have a two-hour daylight shift. And this was in the Christchurch area of New Zealand. And some people favored it, some people did not. William Willett, who is a builder and outdoorsman, he was also in a similar era. And he has been traditionally given credit for making this a more standardized thing back in 1907, when he was in London, kind of recognizing that a lot of folks kept their shutters down in the morning. They didn't like getting up with the daylight. He just thought that was a waste. He's like, why not get out there and be doing stuff? And he also, interestingly enough, the story goes, he liked to golf. And so
he wanted to continue to have this privilege and opportunity to be able to golf after the end of his workday. So that was a funny kind of nuance about how he, Mr. William Willett, kind of independently came up with this idea of daylight saving time in the 1907 timeframe and introduced a bill to the House of Commons in February of 1908. And he lobbied for this until he died in 1915. They didn't get it passed. The first to officially pass it was Ontario, Canada, the Port Arthur area, and that was in the 1908 timeframe. And in the U.S., we didn't really get into it until the First World War, where it was kind of a common idea that we needed to both be able to produce more food for the, you know, for those that were fighting for our country, and we needed to also save energy, right? Save electricity, gas, candles, whatever it was that we were using to lighting our homes back then during the time of the First World War. And so this proposition that had been initially used way back when in the time of the Romans, Benjamin Franklin talked about it, then in the early 20th century, 1908, as we talked about, the House of Commons, it was talked about, as well as in Ontario, Canada, when it was first enacted in 1908. This didn't really happen in the U.S. until the First World War, where during the wartime, we adopted daylight saving time for the first time here in the U.S., although it didn't last long. It lasted, I think it was maybe even less than a year. It was enacted in 1918 and implemented just during the time of war to conserve energy resources. And it didn't last long. It was, I think, even less than an actual 12-month period that it was enacted. It was repealed a year later. And then it was enacted a second time during the Second World War, also for the same kind of general reason, to conserve energy, electricity, and also to potentially grow more food for the soldiers, if you will. But then again, it was stopped after the Second World War and didn't really come into sort of a national level consistently until the Uniform Time Act in 1966. And then later, when I was in my infancy in 1974, we enacted kind of a permanent daylight saving time. And so it's been a long road. It's been interesting. It wasn't the story that you probably may have heard. Here in the U.S. historically, it was during the First and Second World Wars that we did this for a time. And then it was more standardized by the time of 1974. So it's actually a fairly new thing that we've done consistently. And we're going to talk about today whether or not it's good or whether or not it's bad. As I alluded to at the outset, most farmers, contrary to popular belief, have actually traditionally been against the daylight saving time for the reasons that I alluded to, because for them, they actually have to work later into the day, right, to optimize the hours of the sun. And also the work that they do on the farm, you know, as they firsthand recognize the animals don't adopt the new clock, if you will. They do their thing based on the natural solar clock, which is our natural circadian rhythm, right? We are designed and have been for millennia to interact with our environment, to be able to recognize the light and the dark cycles. And that is our primary stimulus to be able to set our own rhythm, our so-called circadian rhythm, which primarily is set by the sun or sunlight. And so I often have been quoted to say, and I'll say this ad nauseum till the day I die, one of my most helpful tips, tricks, and tools to sleeping great, outstanding during the night, is starting my day off with natural light, with daylight, getting outside in those first minutes and hours of the day to be able to expose my eyes, my retina, to natural light. And that helps set the clock, if you will, in my body, my circadian clock, to be able to adapt best to daylight saving. Now, there's a lot of data out there, and it's, I think, pretty well understood that at least in the initial change, which is actually happening this weekend, I'm going to give you some tools to hopefully prepare for that, since you'll have a day or two from the time this podcast comes out before the actual changing or advancing, right, the springing forward of our clocks early Sunday morning, to help you be able to better adapt, adjust, and be able to make that accommodation in your own life to optimize this change. Because unless you live in Hawaii or most of Arizona or the U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, most of us, at least in the U.S., are going to have to deal with the upcoming weekend of advancing our clocks by 1 hour for the so-called daylight saving time. And We can't change that probably before the weekend. If you want to get political, there are some acts out there to be able to end this once and for all. But actually, the one that's been more popular is to preserve it forever, to always stay in daylight saving time, the so-called Sunshine Act, which it sounds kind of good because then you just stay in that forever, but it's actually not the most natural to be able to do, and it involves what we're talking about this weekend. We're losing an hour of sleep. Right now, present day, almost 50% of us, 115 million people here in the U.S., 300 some odd million population, so almost half of our population right now consistently suffers from sleep deprivation. Right now, present day, about 50% of us, one out of two of us already struggles with sleep deprivation. You add on, right now this weekend, or should I say subtract an hour of our normal sleepy time and advance the clocks, we lose that hour. That's going to potentially create more issues with sleep deprivation. And there's been numerous data, numerous studies on the myriad of effects of sleep deprivation on us as humans, and it's not good. Let's just jump to the final answer, if you will. When you are sleep deprived, it affects negatively just about every system in the body. It's actually inflammatory as well, causes increased inflammation, it messes with your hormones. The two that I think of most often, which are really important hormones, the human growth hormone and testosterone, primarily are released at night while we're sleeping. If we're not getting adequate sleep, both of those levels will potentially drop and we won't be able to perform at our best, both men and women, because most people don't know this, but actually testosterone, even in women, is super important. In fact, the level, if you actually take the microgram level of testosterone, it is higher than any other hormone in women. Estrogen is actually lower than testosterone. Testosterone is actually the highest of the so-called sex hormones, if you will, in the body that women have, and also men have. Their levels, of course, are lower than men, but their level of testosterone should be higher than their level of estrogen. And most people have no idea. They don't even think about testosterone in women, but it's super important, especially want to have a super healthy functioning metabolism. You want to gain muscle so that you have the best well-oiled machine, if you will, your metabolic machinery that helps you to have energy to thrive in life. You need to have muscle mass. To have muscle mass, you got to have testosterone. Testosterone also gives you that chutzpah, that energized ability to have that energy throughout the day, not only to be able to be energized, you know, when you want to be, you know, at night with your partner or whatnot, but to be able to have energy throughout the day. Testosterone is super important in women and men, and the levels go down rapidly when you don't sleep. In fact, there was a study several years now ago that was done looking at just subtracting 1 hour out of people's sleep and seeing what that did to testosterone levels. And it dropped them by about 15%, which doesn't sound huge, but when you consider looking at the numbers, that would drop your level down low enough to advance your years, if you will, to about 10 to 15 years in life. In other words, you'd be older, 10 to 15 years older, biologically speaking, with respect to that testosterone level, with just losing 1 hour of sleep. And this was shown quite quickly. This happened readily in just 1 week of time frame. So it's a huge negative effector on your testosterone, on your human growth hormone, when you don't sleep. And so right now this weekend, we're potentially going to get sleep deprived because we're missing a full hour of sleep. And there's tons of data on increased incidence of heart attacks over the weekend, that the time changes. And this isn't anything typical about light and dark, if you will. Their bodies aren't saying, oh, we're just going to have more heart attacks now because it's dark in the morning and it used to be light. If for example, like right now when I get my kids off to school at 7 a.m., they're getting on the bus to go to school. It's light outside, which is actually kind of fun. It's actually really annoying when I have to wake them up. Well, I still have to wake them up in the dark because we get up early enough to be able to prepare everything, get their lunches, get their breakfast, their eggs, bacon, what have you in the morning. That takes a little bit of time. If you got tips and tricks to how to make eggs and bacon a little bit quicker and still have it fresh and whatever, let me know. But that just takes a little bit of time in the morning. And so I'm still getting them up in the dark. But by the time we're actually catching the bus, it's daylight. It's bright. And when it's reflecting off that snow, it's super bright, like my girls shared with me this morning, which is actually kind of fun. But that's all going to change on Monday when we've lost an hour, right? We've advanced that clock. So now when it is, you know, 6 a.m., if you will, or when it was 6 a.m., it'll now be 7, and so it'll still be that darker time frame. We're losing that, if you will, in the mornings in our school prep. They're going to get on the bus again in the dark, which is not awesome. yes, there's been lots of studies showing in that first weekend there's more car crashes because people are driving in the dark to work where they weren't potentially a week earlier. They're getting less sleep, which negatively affects the heart, your cardiovascular health. I presented this, gosh, a couple of years ago when I did one of my first podcasts on sleep. We talked a lot about how sleep can help you, right? It can help you be the most rested, rejuvenated, restorative process that you could ever do, right? It enhances what's called autophagy, which is that self-cleaning, regenerative phase that only happens effectively while we're sleeping and not eating. And when you cut a whole hour out of that, potentially you're not getting into that as easily, and it can adversely affect your health. And I presented two papers way back when I talked about sleep in one of my earlier podcasts, how it can negatively impact your cardiovascular health, literally taking time off your life, years off your life, if you are chronically sleep deprived, both from a cardiovascular point of view, you'll have increased incidence of heart attack and cardiac related death. Also, the brain, which we care a lot about, especially now that the awareness is up, which is amazing, about the dementias, Alzheimer's and others, neurovascular dementias, all the dementias out there, can decrease in frequency if we sleep better. And they increase in frequency, sadly, when we don't get enough sleep. So lots of reasons to make sure you're getting adequate sleep. And like I said, right now, present day, most of us can't do a lot about losing this hour coming up this weekend, but what we can do is we can prepare for that. And so one of the things I'd recommend is start going to bed a little bit earlier, especially do so on Saturday night. Try to go to bed an hour earlier Saturday night. If you can, Friday night, go to bed half an hour earlier. Kind of work up to this, get to bed a little bit earlier so that you can still get your roughly 7 to 8 hours of sleep. In fact, there's this, you know, it's not a prescription, if you will. Everybody's a little bit different. I thrive around 7 hours. A lot of people thrive at around 8, maybe 8.5. For many years, I thought I was thriving on 5 to 6. And there's some people that actually do pretty well on 6 hours of sleep. But most of us, it's closer to the 7 to 8 hour range. So make sure we're getting that and getting that consistently and getting that in a quality way. It's not just hours in the cot, if you will. It's effective and efficient in the way that it needs to be quality. And one of the best ways I know to do that is start your mornings right with bright light in the morning. So get up when the sun comes up. And I'm going to be experiencing this weekend because I'm traveling eastward. So I'm going to be losing more than just that 1 hour. I'm going to be losing 3 hours because I'm moving from the mountain time zone to the eastern time zone. I'm going to lose 2 hours there plus the hour on Saturday night or early Sunday morning, if you will. 3 hours I'm going to be losing. So I'm going to try to get to bed earlier in preparation for that, make sure I'm getting my 7 to 8 hours. And then when I get to the East Coast, I'm going to be there for a week working there in Florida. I'll try to get my 8 hours of sleep if I can, because it's so helpful and useful. And the best way I know to do that is starting the day right with that light exposure when the sun comes up. So get up when the sun rises. If you have a chance to do a walk, slip off your shoes, do some grounding like I'm going to try to do in Florida, right? Florida. I'm going to try to get out with a pair of board shorts on, walk on the beach in the morning, maybe even surf if the waves are working. I hope I can do that. The water's going to be cold. It's around 60 right now, which is not amazing. I'm used to the 80s of Hawaii Nei or high 70s. But hey, I'm going to get out in there, try to get my grounding in. We talked about that a bit recently. But starting your day off right with some natural light is amazing. And also in the evening, one of the next, I think, most powerful things is having a wind down ritual. Most of us are go, 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 go throughout the day. And we don't set aside, you know, roughly an hour to kind of ease and wind down, to have this ritual where we can kind of mellow out at night, which is super important because we're trying to, you know, go to bed at whatever that hour is, 10 o'clock. In my case, is kind of my goal for bedtime, but it doesn't always happen. But I aim for that. But that means I have to at least start my prep around 9 p.m. So I got to get my kids to bed. My goal is try to get them to bed around 8. My older kids around 9. And then I kind of ease into my routine by dimming the lights a bit in the house, turning off the boob tube or the computer work, cell phone, blue light exposure, if you will. Try to read a book. I got this red headlamp. It emits red light, which is a more calming wavelength of light. It's not going to keep you activated and alert. Or you can get some blue blocker glasses if you're into that. They may be helpful. But decreasing your screen time at night, super important. Eating earlier in the evening. Try to have a 3-hour window before you go to bed where you're not eating. So try to have dinner at least 3 hours before you hit the hay. I found that to be super helpful because when I eat late, almost universally, I don't sleep that awesome. I might get to sleep because I'm kind of tired after I get that postprandial, as we call it in Hawaii, the Polynesian paralysis that's occurring after you eat a meal. But then I wake up kind of with an upset stomach, and that might be a couple hours later if I eat too late in the evening. So eat earlier, have the so-called food curfew 3 hours before bed, have a device curfew at least 1 hour before bed. That's kind of my personal goal. Ideally 2 hours before bed, if you could shut off all the blue lights, amazing. Most of us just can't do that with our busy lives. So if you can do 1 hour or even start with 30 minutes, go for it. I think that's super helpful. But you got to have a food curfew, a blue light curfew, and then a wind down ritual, whether that be a hot bath, whether that be time in the hot tub, whether that be reading a book, writing a gratitude journal, whatever that wind down, listening to music, chatting with your partner, just, you know, whatever you can do to kind of ease that just amped up, you know, self that you might have been throughout the day. In my case, I'm living the day pretty amped up, whether it be through doing work or being outdoors with my kids, hitting those big giant snowboarding and ski jumps that I've shared on Instagram, whatever it is. I'm fairly amped up during the day, but I like to ease into my evening so I can have a restful night's sleep with about a 1 hour ritual where I turn off the blue light devices, all of them. I ease into my evening. I usually read a book. I do some journaling. I chat with my kids. We have kind of a wind down time. We get together. We usually read together each night as a family. We're doing that with a little bit dimmer lights. We're not having the TV on, and it's a nice family connection time, because I've been reminded of this lately. There's actually a lot of new data. There's even a study that came out of Brigham Young University in the last couple of years looking at decrease in all-cause mortality, 50% decrease in all-cause mortality with having good social connections, good framework, whether it be with your family, your friends, those that you care about. You have good connections. What I like to call the vitamin C of late, right? Having good connection. It basically is a 50% reduction in all-cause mortality, everything from cardiovascular death, stroke, whatever it may be. Having good both familial friend connections, even with your pets, like that pumps up this amazing rest hormone called oxytocin, the so-called cuddle hormone. It's the anti-stress hormone. I talk about this ad nauseum in a few podcasts I did on stress. It's literally the antidote to stress is oxytocin, and that goes up with personal connection with other people, connection with our favorite feline and canine friends. It amps up this amazing restful hormone called oxytocin. So take advantage of that. Cuddle with your favorite friend, partner, spouse, whatever, kids. I love to, my wife's been out of town lately and I've been snuggling with my kids at night. We'll read together, like I mentioned, on the weekends. We'll watch a movie together, and I'll have one kid around this arm, another kid around this arm, and sometimes they're fighting over who can be there, during the movie or during dinner. I usually have my girls on either side of me when I eat dinner. It's so fun to have that familial connection as often as we can. Even recent studies looking at eating together as a family, both for kids and adults, is super helpful for a couple of reasons. You traditionally, when you eat together as a family, not only are you having this vitamin C of connection, releasing the oxytocin, which helps relax you, helps you have this positive framework that decreases stress, decreases inflammation, but also you tend to eat better, healthier foods, less, ultra processed foods when you eat together, minimum 3 nights a week as a family. That's pretty easy. That's not even half of the night. So shoot for at least 3 nights a week. We shoot for most nights, 5 to 7 nights a week, we usually have a family dinner, and it's been an amazing time for our family to amp up that vitamin C for connection, do a little cuddling. I usually have one kid on either side. We talk story about, in Hawaii, we call it valalau, of what happened during the day, and just kind of make some beautiful connections, usually over the dinner table, which just makes it not only enjoyable, but a lot of fun. And typically it's over some fresh food that we've just made. So I hope these things can be helpful to you. Try to get to bed a little earlier, have a food curfew, a blue light curfew, have a nice easing evening ritual that eases you into that evening time. And make sure at all costs that you still shoot for your 7 or 8 hours of sleep, even when you'll lose this hour over the weekend if you're living in the continental US. It's just gonna happen. Like, don't be upset about it. Do your best to optimize it by using these steps that I've mentioned both here in this podcast and also other podcasts that I've done on sleep, because there's so many helpful things. I even have, it's at least one chapter, maybe even 2 or 3 chapters in the book, where I talk about sleep and how it's so powerful yet so simple. It doesn't have to be rocket science. You don't have to understand all the ebbs and flows of the hormones. Just know that sleep is important. You can't wait to sleep until you're dead. So I hope this is helpful for you. Tackle this weekend. It's going to be amazing. I love you guys and gals for being here, part of this movement, sharing this time with me. I hope this can be helpful. Make sure you share this out. Share it out with a friend, a family member, who's having questions about daylight savings, having questions about sleep, what have you. I haven't even mentioned all the other things about food, but obviously you eat the best food, real, whole, single ingredient foods. There's some things that can kind of help you in the evening time. You can reach out to me if you want to know supplement-wise what I take to help me sleep. I'd be happy to. My favorite is magnesium. It's the mighty mineral that has so many benefits, but I'm always having magnesium right before bedtime. Magnesium 3-in-8 is my favorite, but message me if you want more specifics on my supplement regime, because it is not only helpful for sleep, but in every aspect of my life, because I really believe in thriving, not just surviving. So until next time, a big aloha.
Wow. That was so much fun. I love history. I don't know about you guys, but getting deep and just getting back to what the heck was going on 100 plus years ago. What happened in World War I, World War II? Like, what is all this craziness about daylight saving time? There's the Sunshine Act out there in Congress. There's all kinds of stuff. And it's nice to know the history, but it's also nice to know the facts with respect to what it may or may not be doing to your health. So get into it. Share this episode out. Make sure you share it with a friend, family, relative. You got a couple of days. We're going to be jumping into this daylight saving thing, whether you like it or not. Unless you move quickly to Hawaii or Arizona, you're going to likely be dealing with it. So let's optimize it like we try to do with all things health, which is my slogan. Optimize your health and your life so you can thrive, not just simply survive life. If you want more of it, you want to be connected to me and like-minded folks, you can join my Thrive community. The link is in the show notes. Link is on my Instagram, Dr. Thomas Hemingway. Make sure you're following there. Make sure you're sharing my stuff, because that's how we get this good word out of how you can wake up every morning juiced, energized, refreshed, and thriving, and not just surviving life. So until next time, big aloha. Love each and every one of you. Thank you so much for reaching out, sharing the show, sharing the book, sharing reviews over there on Apple and on Amazon. It means the world to me. I read every one. And until next time, aloha.